Can I just add my hello to Hillary? It's just such a joy. This is my favourite event of the year that we run as a church. It's so lovely to see so many friends and so many friends of friends and meet you all. So thank you so much for coming. I hope you're having a great time. But I want to take us back to Christmas of 2012. It was a long time ago. But back in 2012, ITV was accused of ruining Christmas for approximately 10 million Brits. What had happened was that families had cozied up around their fires, looked at their screens, and were excited for the annual tradition of the Downton Abbey Christmas special. It was delightful. Until those final few minutes, when suddenly Matthew Crawley, the hero of the last three seasons, died. What happened caused devastation to Downton fans up and down the country, and covered newspaper headlines the next day with ITV has ruined Christmas. Now, it's fairly obvious, therefore, that I am an unashamed Downton devotee. And one of the reasons I really love that TV show is because of the way that it brings to life two really distinct but deeply connected worlds. That upstairs world of luxury and privilege, and let's be real, snobbery. And that downstairs world of hard graft and super high expectations. But whether it's Downton or the Grinch, the festive season is full of wonderful stories, isn't it? And the most famous one of all includes wise men and angels, shepherds, and the little baby Jesus. Even 2,000 years later, this true story is still being told. Whether it's being sung in beautiful carols or performed by five-year-olds who probably forget their lines or fall off the stage. But I wonder if you've realised that at the heart of that nativity story is a scandal that is so much bigger than an earl's daughter marrying her chauffeur. Yeah, that baby was born to really ordinary parents in a backwater town in Israel, but he was no ordinary baby. And so tonight, I want to invite you to come and to consider the identity of that baby and the offer that he makes. Because the Christmas cards only tell you the beginning of the story, but there is an ending and there is a purpose to that story. And so we want to ask that question, why was Jesus even born? And what did he achieve when he grew up? So on your tables, you're going to find these little historical accounts of Jesus' life. They're called Mark's Gospel because they're written by a guy called Mark. And in them, we're going to find the answer. Because Jesus tells his mates why he was born and why he came. And I think it might surprise some of us. So if you can turn to page 38 with me, it says Mark chapter 10. And then there's a little number 45, so page 38. And you're going to find these words. Jesus speaking. For even though the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. So Jesus came to serve. Now, you might have thought that was a bit odd. Jesus was talking in the third person about himself. He calls himself the Son of Man. That's just a title, like Your Majesty. It's in the Bible, and it is a historical title to describe God's king, who was going to rule over the whole world. But I wonder what your idea of God is. Maybe he's just kind of distant and impersonal. Perhaps you just believe in a higher power. But what if the Bible's opposite claim is true? That God is personal. That he is the creator of the world, who stepped right down into his creation. The king of heaven, who didn't stay upstairs, but instead came down, lived as a carpenter and a preacher. That would be stupendous. It would be amazing. And the crowds who gathered around Jesus 2,000 years ago, for them, God had quite literally moved into their neighborhood. But maybe your idea of God is more of a tyrant, that he just expects to be waited upon hand and foot. And maybe that's just because secretly, if we were God, we would quite like that kind of first-class service. But if you were to look a little bit further up, just from the verse 45, it says a little 42, Jesus describes just normal leaders that live. And he says that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over people. And I think those words of Jesus ring really true today, don't they? How often we've experienced that in our politics, in our workplaces, even in our sports teams, that the guys and girls in charge just lord it over those beneath them. But also, I hope that we know how attractive it is when we see humble leadership. I think one of the most beautiful examples I always come back to is that of the late Queen. At 21, she promised to serve her nation and the Commonwealth. And 75 years later, she was still promising the same. And every Christmas, when she did her annual broadcast, the image she projected wasn't one that was like stood watching over the military might of tanks or meeting the super rich and super famous. Instead, it was her opening hospitals and going and visiting school children. But Jesus is so much greater than even the best of human leaders. And to see that, we need to remember who Jesus really is and also what his service achieved. So if you were to choose to read through the rest of this account of Jesus' life, probably take an hour with a good coffee or a cup of tea, I think, what you would discover is staggering. Jesus has utterly incredible power. And what does he do with it? He silences storms, he heals the sick, he feeds the hungry, he raises the dead. Jesus is God himself, and he uses all of that power to help the helpless, to give life to the lifeless, to serve those who are deemed socially worthless. That one that great might come and be that low to serve people like us should be amazing to us. But maybe you're thinking, okay, he's a really nice guy. Or perhaps even, maybe I could get with the fact that he's God in disguise, a bit like that TV show Secret Millionaires. But what difference does that make to me here in 2025? Well, that's where we need to see the second part of our verse. Because in it, we're going to see that Jesus gave his life to rescue. So if you look down at that second part of the verse, if you've still got it open in Mark 10, what was Jesus' greatest act of service? Well, it says this, doesn't it? For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Following this conversation with his friends, Jesus was going to enter Jerusalem, and a week later, he was dead. He had been killed on a Roman cross like a criminal. But unlike Matthew Crawley's death back in 2012 that ruined Christmas for loads of us, Jesus' death 2,000 years ago makes Christmas worth celebrating. Why? That sounds crazy. Why do I say that? Well, because Jesus wasn't a helpless victim. No, instead he purposefully gave his life as a ransom for many. Now, sadly, ransom is still really big business today in lots of parts of the world. I looked it up, and ransom is described as that point when someone is trapped or in prison and a payment has to be made for their release. The highest ransom price ever asked was for an emperor who I frankly can't pronounce the name of, back in the 16th century. His ransom price was $2 billion. That is pretty high. And yet, the Bible tells us that Jesus paid an even higher ransom price. He paid with his life. That is so shocking. It is so much more shocking than if the Queen of England rocked up to visit school children, made their lunches, and swept the floor with her hairbrush. Why? Well, because Jesus is God, and that God would do that for people like us is unbelievably amazing. Now, there is obviously nothing more frustrating than a pointless rescue. I was trying to imagine what one of the most pointless rescues would be, and I imagined Summer McIntosh, brilliant Canadian swimmer, at her next Olympics, you know, going for gold, final length, and this guy in red and yellow runs in and he goes, "Stop, don't worry, I'll rescue her, I'll jump straight in." It would be laughable, but Jesus's ransom is not laughable. It's not unnecessary. It is as essential as the air that we breathe. So whether we acknowledge it or not, we are all in really big trouble. The Bible says that every single human being is trapped in a prison of their sin and God's just anger at it. But what is sin? Well, when I chat to the kids at church, the way that I often summarize sin is that sin is S-I-N. So S is shove off God, I'm in charge, no to your rules. And we can see the evidence of that attitude all over our lives. I can see it all over my Christmas. Arguing with siblings, telling the white lie to the boss, burning with jealousy over other people's relationships or presents they were given. We want to live life our way, and we hurt others and we hurt ourselves in the progress. We just push God straight out of the picture. We reject the one who made us, and we actually destroy the most beautiful and precious relationship that we could ever have. But wonderfully, the simple heart of the Christian faith is an offer of a swap. It is Jesus' perfect life in exchange for our messy and rebellious one. And so that glorious good news at the heart of Christmas is that God isn't like Santa, who only rewards us if we're good and not bad. No, instead, Jesus gave his life for anyone who might believe in him. Nor is God just another name on the list of people to serve. I know loads of us, especially women, have loads of people to serve at Christmas. Perhaps it's buy a present for that person, or clean this person's room, or make some cookies for that colleague. Oh yeah, and then I need to serve God just on the top. But that's not it, is it, at all? Because Christianity is not about what we do for God. It's about what he has done for us. And so, what I want us to leave with is recognizing that there is an incredible offer of rescue. I hope that you've seen, just a little bit, that Jesus is a super wonderful leader. A leader who would lead people out of the mess that they made by kicking him to the curb. He is a leader worth trusting. He is a leader worth following. And I can say that he is the only person that has never, ever let me down. So, whether you love a Black Friday bargain or maybe you're more of a Boxing Day kind of deal gal, this Christmas, there is no greater offer that you can receive. Because unlike that discounted hairdryer or cheap phone, accepting this offer from Jesus changes absolutely everything. Now, accepting this offer is not going to stop you dropping the red sauce or missing the plane home, but it will give us purpose and meaning in this life and hope in the face of death. So, what will you be asking for this Christmas? I suspect most of us don't have expectations quite as high as Aretha Kitt's famous Christmas wish. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot, because I've been an angel all year. Maybe we're not asking for a yacht, but I want to suggest that you ask for something infinitely more precious, infinitely more wonderful. The most shocking question, perhaps, we feel we could ask God is this: God, please will you serve me? But actually, I hope that we've seen this isn't shocking, because this is exactly why Jesus was born. He came to offer us a fixed relationship with God. So what would it look like for you to take this offer super seriously this year? To investigate it for yourself? To consider accepting Jesus' offer of a restored relationship with the one who made you? And to experience a love that is so much more than you will ever understand. It is the best offer that anyone is going to offer you this Christmas. And so I would love you to think about it.